This is the Brooklyn Culture Jam with your host, Daniel Kinch. Broadcasting out of Brooklyn, New York, the most important cultural site in the world right now. Tonight on Brooklyn Culture Jam, I'll be talking to Telly Medina about the state of the Gulf of Mexico 5 years after the BP oil meltdown. Mr. Medina is the Senior Gulf Coast Policy Officer for the Oxfam Family America and is featured in the documentary Vanishing Pearls about the African-American fishermen in the Louisiana who have not been made whole by BP. He's well-versed on the current state of the fishing communities as well as the politics surrounding the Gulf of Mexico. You can join us tonight at our regular time, and thank you for tuning in. Hold on just a moment, and we'll be speaking to... Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. So,
Thank you for having me.
Sure. I just gave you a short bio. Let me make sure I'm understanding. You are now working for the Gulf... You are the Gulf Coast Policy Officer for Oxfam America, right?
Yeah, I'm our Senior Gulf Coast Policy Officer for Oxfam America. That is correct.
Okay, and I just actually had the pleasure of seeing Vanishing Pearls, the documentary that features your father-in-law, Byron. So talk to me a little bit about your background there. Talk to me about how you got involved in this. Obviously, you have roots in Louisiana. So let's talk about that a bit.
Absolutely. Vanishing Pearls, an incredible documentary about my family, my wife's family, in regards to their recovery from BP oil spill, but also a story about the oyster industry and some of the difficulties that they have faced over the last, 60 to 70 years from being minority fishermen who are trying to survive. Byron is a third-generation oyster fisherman. Has started his shrimp company when he was 12 years old, working on a boat and going to school. And so here in the Gulf Coast, I'm the former executive director of Louisiana Oystermen Association. And following the date of BP oil spill happened, which is April 20th, Monday, he said that I would need you now. I have a background in managing political campaigns and doing government relations work. So we started on our plight to, ensure that African-American fishermen and all fishermen had a voice within the recovery within the Gulf Coast of what would happen, following Katrina and obviously following BP oil spills, to ensure the individuals would get just compensation, to make sure that their opinions and the things that in the areas for which they cared about were recognized and brought to the forefront, and that's what we tried to do over the last 5 years now.
Right, and the reason we're talking to you right now is actually there are a bunch of commemorations of that five-year event. Here in New York, for instance, we're going to have an evening of commemoration events, and I know in Houston there was a protest at BP headquarters yesterday. So it's getting some awareness, but it seems to me, in looking at the press over the years, the media has been asleep. It's as if the Gulf has been made whole. Is that the case?
That is not the case. I think any reasonable person would believe, would come to find that if you have so much oil pour into the Gulf of Mexico and you find that you did not recover all of it, Mother Nature is incredible, but it did not consume all of the oil that we still find that will pop up in hurricane seasons or even when there's a hard, tough rain or a strong south wind. We very much are still dealing with the after effects of the BP oil spill. For example, on some of the oyster bedding ground where Byron will produce the oysters that are very rich and plentiful in Plaquemines Parish, which is the parish that my family comes from down in a town called Point of La Hache, which is a small fishing village. There, the oyster industry is decimated. And it just wasn't for fresh water and rain. You can see a direct correlation between the oil that was in the water and the effects thereafter. So just because there was a broad media campaign to suggest that everything is fine and everything is going swell, that is not the case. That isn't a knock against BP or the individual companies who were involved. We just ask that the individuals who were involved and the companies make the people of the Gulf whole, be able to fix this so that we can continue to live here and live off the land. In the state of Louisiana, the seafood industry is a $2.8 billion industry, but it is also a good a lot of family fisheries. Individuals who took much pride in their family name and their last name because their grandfathers and their great-grandfathers passed on this tradition of being able to work on the water, and it's something that I would hope that will be passed down to my son, who is Byron's grandson.
Yes, I was going to ask. I was going to ask you about that, because there is a scene in Vanishing Pearls where your father-in-law is taking out, I guess, your son to show him the fishery. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That is correct.
There are so many people. I mean, I was really shocked at how much worse this was. And in the documentary, and you can corroborate whether or not this is still true, the focus of BP and to some extent the local government seemed to be keeping the oil off of the tourist areas, the beaches primarily, whereas the bayous and the places where the oyster beds were, which aren't seen by the tourists, were almost ignored. Tell me if I'm wrong about that.
Well, that's a difficult thing to corroborate, and I said it just because we don't have beaches, you know, per se, as Florida or Mississippi or Alabama does here in portions of South Louisiana. What I can say is that there is a direct correlation between the oysters that are caught in Point of La Hache and the success of restaurants in the French Quarters and the businesses on Bourbon Street. There's no other place in the country where you can catch oysters or shrimp at 9 a.m., make it back to the marina by 10:30, and at 1 o'clock inside of the French Quarter, eat a shrimp or oyster pool boy sandwich. That is something that is unique. We say that New Orleans has the best food. And I don't think that the chefs at the restaurant you might go to later this evening are any better or worse than the chefs that we have in New Orleans. What I will tell you is that we have a superior product. And in order to protect the product, we must protect the water. And if the water has been violated by oil, then we need to do our best to mitigate the oil and whatever substances were put into the water in order to hide it, in order to make it disappear, or in order to eliminate it. If that has not happened, and we see that critical mistakes have been made, then we need to do our best and due diligence in order to improve what is happening with our water, and at that same rate, improving the families that depend on this very important seafood.
You had written a column in NOLA about 2 years ago about the Gulf not being back yet. Talk to me about what's changed since then, if anything.
I can say that the individuals, if you drop a rock inside of water, that they're ripples. And so you would assume that similar to the oil that was dropped in the water, that the individuals who are first affected will be taken care of. I can say that the fishermen have not been made whole. There are individuals and countless amount of people who are in the industry and ancillary industries around it that have went out of business. There are individuals who had to go seek other employment. There are individuals whose family has suffered because of it. Because this isn't just a product in order to sell to individuals. This is also the product that families, men and women, put on their tables in the evening time in order to feed their mothers, their children, their aunts and uncles. And so you can see that there hasn't, those individuals who are most affected, the people that are in my family, have not been made whole. You can also see that the people hadn't gotten back to the point where they can trust around this country that the seafood that we think is the most scrutinized in the world, specifically especially following the BPO spill, that has been tested, that the individuals don't have the trust around parts of the country and around the world in order to eat our seafood. I would like to reiterate that we have eaten shrimp on this weekend at my house for my youngest son, who's named after my father-in-law, Byron Medina, after my father-in-law, this weekend, that we're not going to feed to the world and to the United States and to the people who enjoy South Louisiana a product that is not good. If we won't feed it to our families, then we're not going to feed it to your family. That's a message that needs to be put out in order for individuals to know that we're doing our best to fix these problems. We just need the help.
But also, I'm listening to you, and what I'm thinking of, and obviously a completely different disaster, but one of the things that has occurred as a result of the plant meltdown in Fukushima is that farmers are selling product that they no longer have confidence in. Do you think, leaving your family out of it for a moment, because I trust your folks, but how do you think the Gulf in general, can I trust seafood out of the Gulf?
I think that from the people that I know, and I'm not just talking about my family, I'm talking about family, friends, and other folks that we do business with, I don't think that these individuals, and I know these individuals, will not sell you a product that is tainted. In the areas for which you can see where the seafood is caught, it is tested by the feds and also by the state in order to ensure when you go into restaurants, some of the restaurants, they can tell you the quadrant where the seafood was caught. What fisherman brought it in? If that person had issues with product in the past, so I can say that if you come to New Orleans or you see a seafood from this part of the country, that when it makes it to your plate, that it is safe. Are we going to always have concerns or things going to pop up that we feel that we need to mitigate right then and there? Absolutely. But it's our brand. We can't let some small monetary come up affect the brand that we have positioned for South Louisiana, for New Orleans, and for the Gulf Coast region over all these years. If one person gets sick, if one person isn't safe by the product that we produce, then we all fail. We can't allow that to happen because we've come too far within our recovery. 5 years after the BPO spill, 10 years after Hurricane Katrina, we have to go forward.
Well, let me ask you one other thing here. As you were talking, and I'm thinking about this, you now, I did some research on you, and you now kind of work for Governor Jindal, do you not?
No, I don't work for Governor
Jindal.
Okay, I was appointed.
I apologize.
No problem. No, I was appointed by Governor Jindal to the Governor's Advisory Commission, which is a commission around coastal restoration.
Okay, do you see, though, here's my question, because I was researching this. Governor Jindal was very upset during the time when BP was leaking out of the Macondo wells that all of the pumping had been shut down in the Gulf. Do you think that there's an inherent conflict between keeping the Gulf pristine and keeping the oil flowing?
I think that is an excellent question. I want to be very straightforward with you on it. That we in South Louisiana and in Louisiana as a whole found it very difficult to survive without the oil and gas industry. In fact, the individuals who are in my family who work in oil and gas and in the seafood industry, or work just in the seafood industry, or just work in oil and gas. We have found a way to survive over generations with the two industries figuring out what was wrong and correcting itself. The problem lies in a company that makes decisions to practice in an unsafe fashion or go after some of the larger wells that we know that may be concerns. If you're going to drill the big well like Macondo, then you have to have things in place. Of all the things that happened in the BP oil spill, the most important were the 11 individuals who lost their lives. We cannot, I repeat, we cannot ever allowed that to happen again because of irregularity, because of wanting to see profit. And so what I would say is that Governor Jindal is no fool. I may not agree with all his policies, but I will say that he realizes that the oil industry, the oil and gas industry, means a lot to Louisiana. But the seafood industry and ancillary industries around it mean a lot to the culture and flavor as well. And so we need to be able to, they've had other oil spills before. Maybe it lasted 2 or 3 days. But you can't have an oil spill that lasts for 2.5 months. And therein lies one of the larger problems. And so in the commission that I'm appointed to, we consider those things with a variety of other issues. And things are never going to be perfect, but we have to make sure that safety is the priority.
Okay, so I understand all of that, but one of the points, and obviously I'm not putting you on the defensive vis-a-vis the documentary. The documentary has its own director and its own point of view. But one of the points that was also brought up is how poorly compensated so many people in the Gulf were. Meanwhile, BP has essentially not made good on many of its promises. How does that dynamic play out?
Oh, I don't debate it at all. I agree with that, that BP has been allowed to operate, get back, and because the industry is so profitable, recoup some of its losses. And the individuals who are suffering within the bureaucratic red tape that it has taken to get from the dollars leaving PP going to the federal government, and some of those dollars coming out in the form of what will be the Restore Act, has taken long. In the individual court system, for which none of us control outside of the courts, the claims process where we'll make the determination will be made on how, in what form or fashion BP was liable and what amounts the individuals deserve and how payouts will happen. That process has not given real due diligence to the individuals who are on the ground who are affected. So I don't want to distance myself from it. I realize that that definitely is an issue for which I and other individuals like Byron have worked in order to try to remedy. But we are where we are, and we need to move forward from here. And we will continue to advocate for people who are left out of the process who need to be made whole.
Now, recently there was an article that made its way around the internets talking about the cleanup and a University of Florida study that found the entire bottom of the Gulf in thousands of square miles layered with dirty oil. What does that portend for the future of the ability of the Gulf to produce safe, edible food?
I have not seen the study, so it would be difficult for me to comment on it. But with that said, I would be being dishonest to say that I don't believe that there are pockets in places where we still will see oil in the Gulf of Mexico. It does scare you for the foreseeable future until we know that we have, you know, extracted enough oil out of the water in order for seafood to be safe, but in order for the Gulf as a whole to be safe as well. It makes it very scary leading to the future. It makes it scary for oil biz that we know that will reproduce following Katrina into the BP and leading up to the BP oil spill, that we don't see product coming back, specifically in the oil industry and in some parts of the shrimp industry. So it is very scary.
Now, in the documentary, again, you're not responsible for it, but I'd like you to vouchsafe some of this. There seems to be a long history of racism and bias in the way that the fishermen, such as your father-in-law, were treated by the state government. Do you think that has any part in what's currently going on vis-a-vis the fact that many of the fisheries are being ignored, you know, that there was more interest in doing kind of a cleanup, that the oil wasn't on the surface and visible, rather than making sure that the people like your father-in-law were made whole?
Does bias and racism still exist in South Louisiana in all forms and in all industries? I do believe that. Can you verify it? At times you may not be able to. But it will be difficult in this instance to pinpoint and focus on it, because this is at times less of an issue about race and more of an issue about class. The individuals who need most, poor white men, poor black men, poor Asian men, and some Native Americans, or suffering the worst, those individuals need to get dollars into their hands. And so as far as race is concerned, does it exist? Of course it does. But this is an issue about class and the working class people needing to be made whole, the working class people having opportunities in order to participate in the rebirth of the Gulf of Mexico, for which Oxfam America, Louisiana Oysterman Association, Zion Travelers Cooperative Center, and individuals have envisioned since we started working on and in this arena some 5 years ago. So it's important that we get dollars in people's hands so they can make the decisions to move forward for themselves and for their family.
Okay, we're coming to the end here, and I wanted to thank you again for being here. I did have one other thought, and this is kind of out of left field, but one of the things that in my research for this, Louisiana, New Orleans, Mississippi Delta area in general is such a cultural prize, if you will. You know, so many of our great artists have come from there. So much of what makes America what it is, you know, whether you're talking about Zydeco music or the Delta blues or a variety of different kinds of culture. How is that going to change? Is that going to stay the same? Do you think New Orleans, Louisiana in general, can it stay the way it is right now, now that we've faced down this huge disaster?
New Orleans is less of a place and more about a feeling. The individuals who come here know that they feel something. And so the heartbeat of that experience and that feeling is the people. The people who says, hey, baby, how you doing? Can I fix you something to eat? For individuals to know that the best gumbo is always at somebody's mama or auntie's house and not necessarily at a restaurant. Someone who says we're going to go out and Zydeco dance all night long when we cut corners. That is as much about the people and the tradition of the individuals along the entire Gulf Coast, from the muddy Mississippi on down to people who are family and friends in Mobile who come over from Mardi Gras or when we go to vacation in Destin. Individuals love their identity of their state, but we love identifying as the Gulf Coast. But we realize this, that from New Orleans to parts of Pensacola, there are 4.5 million people who are impoverished. It is important as we try to improve the Gulf and get things back to where they were, that we focus on getting things to be better for all of the individuals who live here. So that's our focus, and that's what I'm committed to do. And I think that if we have that at the center, focus on the people, then we'll be able to keep our culture and tradition, and we will really believe in the essence of laissez le bon temps rouler.
And with that, Telly Medina, thank you so much for joining us. Keep us informed. I know there are anniversary commemorations of the BP blowout all weekend, and I wish you and your folks the best.
Thank you so much.
Oh, wait, one more thing. Do you have a website? Any information for updates for people who are interested?
For updates, you have www.oxfamamerica.com. Where you can receive information in regard to Oxfam, www.vanishingpearls.com for updates on what's going on with the documentary. And, of course, folks can always email me, and you can track me down via the Oxfam website.
Thanks once again. And to play us out, we have Jimmy Buffett playing I Will Play for Gumbo. This is the Brooklyn Culture Jammers. If you want to join me Monday night, we are doing a commemoration for the Gulf at the Producers Club. Go to my website, brooklynculturejammers.com. And thanks again for joining us tonight. Have a great evening. Don't eat beignets, too much sugar and dough, but I will play for gumbo. Yes, I will play for
my grandma's in her kitchen by the sea. She warned me when she told me, son, the first one's free. It hit me like a rock or some taekwondo, cause I will play for gumbo. Oh yeah, I will play for gumbo. A piece of French bread with which I wipe my bowl. Good for the body, good for the soul. It's a little like religion and a lot like sex. You should never know when you're gonna get it next. At midnight in the quarter or noon in Thibodeau, I will play for gumbo. Yes, I will play for gumbo. I'm not talking quesadillas or a dozen Krispy Kremes or a pound of caviar, that's a rich man's dream. No banana split or filet of pompano, no. I will play for gumbo, yeah, I will play for gumbo. Jouer, jouer. A French bread with which I wipe my bowl. Good for the body, good for the soul. It's a little like religion and a lot like sex. You should never know when you're gonna get it next. Maybe it's the sausage or those pretty pink shrimp, or that popcorn rice that makes me blow up like a blimp. Maybe it's that voodoo from Marie Laveau, but I will play for gumbo. Yeah, I will play for gumbo. The sauce boss does his cooking on the stage, stirring and a singing for his nightly wage. Sweating and a fretting from his head to his toes, playing and a swaying with the gumbo. Praying and buffeting with the gumbo. A piece of French bread with